This is the art of discussing, where everyone is committed to having discussions with people sharing different points of view while respecting the person expressing them. We're your hosts. I'm Ben.
And I'm Kate. And we're excited that you've joined us. Let's get to this week's episode.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Art of Discussing. We're your hosts. I'm Ben.
I'm Kate.
And today we're talking about cryptocurrency and a little bit of it, the evolving landscape that's kind of happening both in America and the United States and around the world. So let's just get right into it. Cryptocurrencies.
So first off, let's just establish Kate is learning and has very small amount of understanding of this and has did some research to try and figure out the lingo. But clearly this is going to be a Ben understands.
Well, episode, I mean,
and I will have questions.
I mean, I count myself also a student of crypto, right?
You're more of an expert than me.
Okay. which is using the term expert extremely loosely. Right? Like I might know some of the definitions a little more, but unlike like say a history or, you know, US history or some of the things that we've spoken about before, I don't come here with like a long record of knowing things about crypto. I'm just a little bit about me. I'm just now starting to be an investor in the space, learning a little bit more about, you know, the technology itself, and looking at the pros and cons and kind of some of the things that we'll be talking about today, which is benefits/pros of using cryptocurrency and introducing it. Actually, we'll probably talk about some definitions, just a few, and some things that are important to clarify are the term digital assets versus cryptocurrencies. One is a subset of the other and not vice versa. So,
which is
like,
all more than I have. I have not dabbled. We just started talking about this, so I'm just starting to get the world of it. So I will probably be really good for those listeners who have absolutely no idea except for what they've heard inside of like the regular news of Bitcoin and crypto's a thing. So I'll be asking maybe those simple/dumb questions that will help hopefully somebody who's listening. And I know there's no dumb question,
but
you know, like the basic level.
All right. Let's go with basic level understanding.
And I think this conversation is going to lead into a little bit more inside of technology in the future around, you know, how this is going to impact, kind of like a teaser for another episode, like how this is going to impact the internet and how internet's going to impact this and any new versions we have and of the internet and et cetera. So I think this is a bigger conversation and we're just starting it off in this space, if I'm understanding correctly. And again, technology skipped a generation, so I am going to be learning with the rest of y'all.
Well, so let's start there, shall we? So Kate, what I hear you saying in that moment, right, like is like I don't know technology very well, and ergo this is virtually unknown to me, and I get that and I understand that. I would say most of the U.S. people in the U.S., you know, just people on the street, our listeners included, probably have heard of cryptocurrencies, have heard of Bitcoin. Let's just stay with Bitcoin for that, right? Like I'd say everybody's heard of Bitcoin, has heard of the term cryptocurrency, whether you know anything about it or not. A lot of people nowadays associate with cryptocurrency equals risky. And I got that, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes. But when one talks about like technology, I don't know technology. This is technology, ergo I don't get it, right? I did run across an article, actually, in Time magazine, and we'll put this all in our notes, but and it made the very interesting assertion that money, right, there's a difference between money and currency. Money being a concept, currency being an evolving technology to express money over the years. What do I mean by that? Well, okay, money is some abstract, like money could be anything. Money is not a currency. Money is all of that, right? The concept, exchange. Like if you barter, if you're trading, technically, you know, that's money-ish, right? That's money adjacent. If you're talking about dollars, francs, Deutschmarks, dating myself, like shekels,
peso, pounds.
You know, peso, pounds, right? Like all that. Those are all currencies. They're not money. Technically, they're all money, right? And each one of those things is currency unto itself. The technology of which itself has changed. Let's go with what a lot of people understand. Once upon a time, back in the day, there was gold, right? Shiny. Ooh, ah, I like it. You know, let's make a certain size of these bad boys, start cranking them off, and let's use those, right? Coins, ergo gold slash silver, those were value, and that's used as currency slash money, right? A lot of people understand that, but what you don't get is that, so that's the start. The moving of that, so if gold is the new thing, gold coins are awesome, and if you're rich, you've got a lot of gold. Right. Let's just that's how these things work. OK, mm-hmm. Great. So how do I take my lot of gold to market and buy like floss and flaunt my wealth? Right. Like I need carts. I need donkeys. I need people, slaves carrying my gold. Right. Because it's heavy. It's you get so much of it and it's heavy. Right. So sooner or later, you know, along that timeline, someone said, all right, well, leave your heavy coins with me and I'll give you a piece of paper that says you have this many coins with me over here. Eventually, people just started trading those pieces of paper themselves. And now I don't need a caravan to represent my vast wealth, right? Like maybe I need a briefcase to carry the wealth of a nation. You know, I could just go up to that the in Greece, some of these benchmarks, I'm kind of skipping over, you know, a little of the history that I read, but you know, you got like first guy minting coins in ancient Greece. You got China, you know, making coins, and that's kind of the thing. And then the paper exchange happening. But now you see you can carry a lot more wealth, more portable, more easy, right? And yet it's the same amount of coins. And if you start to get weird about it, like you don't trust this new technology of paper, well, then you could take the paper to ye old coin repository and go, I have this many papers equals this many coins. Let me get my coins. How are you going to move that anywhere? Because you're literally standing where you walk to go somewhere to give this guy paper. And now you've got like a mountain of coins that you can't transport, right? It's kind of like going to the grocery store and trying to pay for stuff with socks of pennies. You can do it, arguably, depending on where you are. And everyone's kind of going to look at you a little weird. Fast forward to today, all we've really done is continue to move away from the paper means gold to credit, right? Like I got this much paper. Can you like spot me paper? Which is really, that's just a new technology. It's just a new technology is what it is. So now we're to a point where I can't at home where I am, you know, on this podcast, I could show you my dollar, right? I could break it out and show it to you, but I can't throw it to the vendor online and then they throw me my stuff, right? So I got to somehow have it virtually, electronically, so that then they can send me my stuff, but they have the confidence that they're going to get what they need. So here we are at online, you know, shopping, digital currency, credit card use, and this kind of technology. No,
payment pal.
Right. Things like PayPal, which is all, you know, PayPal, Venmo, Zelle, different technologies which make it more secure so that you can just transact online. cryptocurrency, digital assets, again, not interchangeable, we'll get to that in a second, are just an extension of that technology. So I know you're saying like, oh, technology skipped a generation, but technology as a concept has not skipped a generation. You're perfectly comfortable with the concept of paper money not tied to gold coins, right? Your father wouldn't say that. Your father is used to, your father and my father, aka for our listeners, anybody in the US circa before the year 1971, 72 timeframe, right? When we came off the gold standard, you could go and take your dollars and go get a certain amount of gold that it equaled that, right? And now we can no longer do that. So that in that sense, technology, you're comfortable with some technology, and you just may not be on the forefront of where technology is going, which a lot of people are in that same area, right? Like, so that's kind of a quick overview of like the history of money. Money as a technology is what I would say about that.
I guess to clarify, I'm not focused on what's coming, or, you know, like I'm focused on here and now, some, you know, and basically if I can make something work technology wise, I go with it, versus how do I make it more efficient or better, or like Alexa or whatever those other things to make your life easier. It's not as important to me.
Yeah.
So,
and,
for
and it is increasingly more important to our everyday lives in the United States, right? Like, for instance, and whether by accident or by deliberate steps, I don't know if you have an Android or an iPhone, but on the scale of flip phones to, or iPhone, the first one to iPhone, I don't even know what they're up to now. Is it like 14, 13? 36. I don't know what they're up to.
Can act like a satellite phone.
Right. Yeah. It leaves your pocket and circles around your head and gives you all the information. I don't know what it does. But like on that spectrum, most people are not at iPhone 1, right? And if let's call it 13. I honestly do not know where iPhone is right now, but let's call it, okay, let's call it 14. So that's an even number. I like it better. So 1 to 14. Most people, you've at least got an iPhone 7, right? Like, at least. Otherwise, it becomes unwieldy. And yes, that is very reluctant for most of us, but like it does happen, right? Very few of us, especially after a worldwide pandemic, are not comfortable with shopping online in any, right? Maybe some of us do it totally. And some of us do it occasionally, but all of us have understood that this is a possibility, right? Like, we've kind of sorted it out, especially when you're locked down, you don't really have a choice. You kind of got to figure something out. So there's that. And by digital assets, so let's talk about the largest, when you're talking about money that you're not, that's no longer tangible, but it's in cyberspace. All of that realm is covered by the term digital assets, right? So you using your credit card to shop online right now, that is an example of the use of digital assets, which is separate from cryptocurrencies. Cryptocurrencies is something that specifically uses something called the blockchain technology, right? And it currently is bought and traded and it's volatile and all that good stuff over there. Within this thing called cryptocurrencies, which is a digital asset. So cryptocurrencies are a digital asset. Digital assets are more than just cryptocurrency. So you got cryptocurrencies. And now inside of this box I got called cryptocurrencies, there's something called stable coins. We'll get to that in a second, but it's an attempt to have coins that function like dollars, like actual dollars online.
Kind of like investing in like bonds or mutual fund type
is the thought process.
Yeah, yes. It's as the safer, stable the safer as you bet can get without getting out of the market,
which was thought widely to be like stable coins, hence the term. And because of bad actors, we don't always get there, right? So, an increase because of recent events, an increased need for regulation. And just responsible growth and development of this space is kind of what spurred the president's executive order back in March of this year. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. But that, I wanted to cover cryptocurrency and digital assets so that you kind of understand their relation to each other. Cryptocurrencies are digital assets, and not every digital asset is a cryptocurrency. So that don't use those interchangeably is what I mean to say. So, what next? Now we talked a little bit about money as a technology, and we have a little working definition on cryptocurrencies. I mentioned blockchain. What do you know about blockchain?
I mean, I know the definition that I found, but I couldn't like pull something out of my head and say what that definition is right now. Okay. It seems like it's the structure for managing cryptocurrencies and tracking how they're managed and what happens with them. But I could be completely off.
Let's say that blockchain in and of itself is a technology upon which cryptocurrencies are based. So blockchain technology are not cryptocurrencies, but cryptocurrencies are based on blockchain technology.
Yeah.
Why do I say that? I say that because we may find, so at its core, blockchain technology can be used in other applications. We just most popularly these days hear it used in terms of cryptocurrency, the engine that fuels cryptocurrency.
So what right? other applications, is it virtual applications, I'm assuming? Like
right, it would all be online. Yes, it would be.
It could be used in other applications online, virtually, and as a like structure kind of, or as like a platform, it sounds like.
Right, a technology.
To build everything else on. And cryptocurrency is one of those things that could be built on it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Essentially, in terms of cryptocurrency, it's an online ledger that uses decentralized means for verification. Well, that's a lot of fancy words. What?
For virtual. QuickBooks for virtual. Just joking.
More that we each have a copy of, right? Like if you have any money at all, then you have this QuickBooks and it's your job to kind of verify just the, like everybody is on QuickBooks. Every time somebody uses money, it generates a entry, and people independently can go on and verify those entries.
Yeah.
Oh, this looks it's right. Like yeah, the math there is right. The math there is right. Right. And there, those are immutable and permanent in time, right? Like only after a certain amount of transactions happen, it creates a block, and that block won't change. Right. And then it's moved forward. Another block has popped up. Right. And what it can tell you is this cryptocurrency, this amount of cryptocurrency went from this space in cyberspace to this space in cyberspace, right? Which is a, call it what you want, an account, a wallet, a hot wallet, a cold wallet, right? It went from here to here, this amount, right? At this date and time, one way. They can't be reversed, right? Like, so it's there and everybody can see that. When that block is filled, then another one comes up and the same thing happens all over again. They're joined together in techno, like, right? Like, so you can reference other past blocks, but they can't be changed. So that's what's talked about blockchain technology.
I didn't hear the term when I was researching hot and cold wallet. What is that?
Oh, okay. So where does one put one's money that one has in cryptocurrency, right? A hot wallet is a virtual wallet that your computer has that you can put cryptocurrency in, right? It has like a little address on it, and you have cryptocurrency sent to it and it stays there. And you can access it by using your laptop, your computer, perhaps your mobile phone. Examples of hot wallets are like MetaMask is a very popular one. We're not sponsored by any of these guys. I'm just throwing them out. But Garda wallet and the major exchanges in the U.S., major exchanges, don't get offended, they're exchanges. I mean, Coinbase is one. Crypto.com is another. FTC, U.S. FTC is another. You can actually hold crypto on the exchange itself in a wallet. So those are hot wallets. A cold wallet is a wallet that you hold crypto in, not online. Right. So if I have this is not a thumb drive, but if I have like a thumb drive and I put it in here and it can download crypto into and I take it out, this is an example of a cold wallet. Cold wallets are more sophisticated now that they look like they're about the size of a phone, maybe, but they're not connected to the internet.
So no one can steal wallet, them unless they get access to that device.
Yes, no one can steal them unless they punch you in the nose and take your cold wallet. This, like, if, hey, give me this, snatch. Now, that's a good thing that you bring that up. Now, I've got your cold wallet, right? This is not mine. I mean, it is mine, but I ran over, I took it, now it's mine, and now I'm going to plug it in my computer and I got all your money, right? Wrong. You, in order to access either a hot wallet or a cold wallet, right, you need to know the key. And the key is, I've seen it be 12 phrase. So it's a set of 12 words in a sequential order that you type in, and then that's the key. I've seen it be 12, 15, 18, and 24, I think. I may be off on one of those, but I know it 12 and 24 is accurate. So if you lose your key, if you lose your words, and they're generally words that don't form a sentence, and you should write them down somewhere or have them in a, you know, whatever. So somewhere safe so that you can just pick it up and go, these are my words to get into this wallet.
So that even if no one comes to grab your and steal it, you actually don't also lose access to it because you forgot.
If they're on this and you lose this, unless
I meant if you lost that phrase, those 12 or 24 words, like, it wasn't matter if somebody came and punched you in the nose and took it.
You also lost it. Yes.
It was the same difference, basically.
That's right. It's like losing your wallet with money in it. It's just gone.
Yeah.
And very much like losing your wallet with money in it. It's just gone and it's out of circulation. Those dollars that were in your wallet,
yeah,
like nobody else on the planet can spend them. Until someone finds your wallet and spends them in the real world. But in the crypto world, those are gone. Unless they get that and have your phrase, it's useless.
So I would assume that hot wallets are more popular or more used than cold wallets? Overall?
I couldn't say which one was more used. I've heard different people talk about different scenarios. Like some people buy and trade, keep some of it on their hot wallet, but when they get to a certain amount, then they transfer to their cold wallet. I know some people that just use cold wallets, right, and only transact when they want to surface and get online to acquire crypto. Then they download it to their cold wallet, and that's it. So there's different different styles and strategies. I'm not certain which one is used more often. Or the most, right? I know that for maximum security, you would buy crypto on an exchange, send it to a cold wallet, not next to the internet. But some people do that a lot, right? Like if you send I spend $100 a month on crypto, maybe you use a hot wallet to have it go to before you move it to your cold wallet. I don't know. Yeah. So, but does that answer your question about hot and cold wallets? Sorry to just throw that out there. So essentially, let's talk a little bit, now that we talked, got a couple definitions in us, why is kind of crypto, if you may have noticed, out listeners out there, that at this time of that we're recording this, which is the beginning of October 2022, we're talking a lot of stuff about economy, right? We're talking a lot of stuff globally. We're talking about inflation. That's a hot button topic. And cryptocurrency, which at this time, cryptocurrency is kind of on a downslide. To be perfectly honest, most things financial, you know, economy related are on a downslide, right? Like, it's not just cryptocurrency or digital assets that are taking a downturn, as is the stock market, as is, you know, a lot of things. That term, and it's relevant to this discussion, is generally referred to as macroeconomics. So when we're talking about the country's economy, we're talking about stocks, inflation, you know, interest rates and cryptos and all that's referred to as macroeconomics. And the reason why I just bring that up is macroeconomics and policy has a strong, powerful influence factor on the cryptocurrency market.
Similar to like the stock market.
Right. Right. So it is, and then I'm not at this time of this recording, if everything is going down, it will also mean that the cryptocurrency market will be adversely affected. Right. So there is that.
They were talking about that a lot in the research, like earlier in the summer, that I, you know, like what's going to happen this fall, like as things, you know, and so it kind of makes me wonder, like, what's the benefit of cryptocurrency if it's not adversely affected by, like, most people, I would assume, would think cryptocurrency is a good way to go in some cases because it's virtual and it's not necessarily tied. It's decentralized, as you've told me. It's not tied to the financial market or a bank or stocks. It's while I get now that there's an adverse effect, I would have thought the benefit is it's kind of outside. It's like the evil stepsister of the market, or not evil, but the like black sheep of macroeconomics a little bit, and would have gotten some benefit from not being tied to the economy and other digital assets. But it sounds like that's not accurate. So what It are the benefits then, if it also will go down during a downturn?
Excellent. That is an excellent question. So let's hold on to that. I want to repeat it back to you so I know what you're talking about, right? Like, given that cryptocurrency operates kind of out a little outside of any one country's influence, right? It's decentralized. It doesn't, and we'll talk about centralized banks in a second, but that given that it's decentralized, wouldn't one expect it to be less influenced by the happenings of a less subject to macroeconomic factors like an inflation if cryptocurrency kind of exists outside of that, right? And that's so yes. The super short answer before I come back.
Yes or no only.
Is because we are still using our assets, right? Our dollars, which are influenced by those things, to acquire the cryptocurrency. But its behavior, if it were mainstream, like more, would maybe resist those. And that's kind of what some people tout as a benefit to cryptocurrency. So let's talk about that next.
I feel like that's the opposite, but okay.
That
if it was more mainstream, it would be affected more by, I understand the first part. Let me put it that way. I get that because we have to take actual dollars, pounds, cents, whatever, and convert that into cryptocurrency. So in that sense, we are attached to the economics. But I would have thought that if it was mainstream, it would have that, it would have more of an impact on, or it would be more impacted by macroeconomics. Whereas you're saying the opposite. You're saying that it may not have, it may be more resistant. I get the resistant part, but I don't know, it's not going in my brain. Like,
okay.
It feels like it should be have it sh- if it's more decentralized and outside of the system in that sense. Yes, I get that it's more volatile. If there were some regulations or something, okay, that would defeat the purpose a little bit of the being outside of the system.
Right, right.
So I guess I'm answering my own question. But I just would have thought initially that that would have been different.
So let me see if I can address that. First and foremost, I do want to say, like, I am a new student to this, all of this. And by all of this, I mean decentralized finance, centralized finance. I'm not a wizard financial guru person, or financial expert. Guy. I don't even know the correct terminology to throw at you right now, right? To say that I'm that financial dude.
He's not a crypto financial advisor.
Of any, I'm not a subject matter expert of any of this, but I am seeking out and learning, which, as I'll actually get to you, that seems to be a con of cryptocurrencies, in a second. But for the first thing I want to say is one more definition that I haven't used yet, and I intend to use this term as we continue talking. So I want to cover. We covered money currency, right? So we all know what currency is. I will refer to those currencies, the traditional currencies, as everybody understands them, right? Paper money, as fiat currencies, right?
Not the car.
Right, not the car. Fiat currency is a general overall. So if I say fiat currency, I'm talking about, take your currency of choice, whether it be dollars, euros, pounds, pesos, whatever it is, yen, renminbi, whatever it is, that's what it's going to be, right? Fiat currency is the paper. Cryptocurrency is the asset online. So, which isn't digital assets. But the reason why I make that is distinction is if it were just, and this is to answer your question, Kate, right? Like, so if it's just me, let's make a central banks create and control currencies. So the Bank of England, which is the central bank of the, you know, Great Britain, it issues currency. It has the sole authority to make money. Anybody else doing it, jail. Right?
That's so called bad. Counterfeiting.
No doing that. Yeah, yeah, we got words for that. We got laws for that. No es bueno. And so most countries have a central bank that distributes, controls currency. It does so in order to influence its own economy as it sees fit, right? And quick aside, it kind of does that on an international stage to different degrees to kind of be stronger than, weaker than other currencies. But that's beyond the scope of what I'm talking about here. So in the United States, our central bank is called the Federal Reserve. I'm only going to touch on this. It is neither a bank nor is it federal and having to do with the government. I'm going to leave that alone. If you guys want to look that up, it's interesting. Go check it out. But this organization, the Fed for short, does control our money. Are the pool of money, right? The flow of it. It is not the treasury, which has the sole of authority to print money, but it does raise interest rates, lower interest rates, and it pulls these levers in order to affect our economy. We kind of talked about that on another episode. If you want to check that out. But that's
it's the kind central- of like the consultant, like it tells you what to do or it doesn't, but it's the consultant to the government almost, or the advisor with actual teeth in the sense that it actually can do stuff.
Yeah. And while true, 100% true, it's talked about in the vein of a central bank relation to a government for a country. And that's what we'll use it for here, right? So a decentralized currency, such as cryptocurrency, is not controlled. So there's a certain amount of it out there. And here's something a lot of people that don't know a lot about cryptocurrency may not know. When a cryptocurrency is released, is created and then released, there's a certain amount of it. That's the end of my sentence. There's no more. So no one's printing more Bitcoin. No one is printing more Ethereum. Or that's not how it works. Now, there's a finite out there. There's a difference between how much is created, and they could tell you that number, and how much is in circulation. Because there is a way that it's not creating more, but it's discovering more. There you go. That's a better way to put it.
So Bitcoin, I think, if I remember correctly, when we were looking this up, it has about 21 million
Bitcoins.
There's 21 million Bitcoins. It only, I'm rounding numbers, so it's and change, 21 and change. And only 19 million and change is actually circulating, has been discovered through quote unquote mining.
Right.
So people have gone through the, people have gone through the coding, have gone through and tried to find stuff, and they found 19 and change million of the Bitcoin that's out there through the mining process. AKA discovery process.
And we'll talk about, we'll call them, and the reason why I call them discovery process is because they have, the terms are proof of work or proof of stake or proof of, you know, history. It depends on what the coin is, but most coins follow a proof of work way, which, as Kate alluded to, has to do with discovering more of it. So
there's other ways for it to become available.
Right. It goes from being not available to being available, right? But not created.
Yeah, the most popular is proof of work, but there's other ways to have it become discoverable or mined.
That's right.
Okay.
And we'll get a little bit more into that, because one of the cons that I have that I've had listed for Bitcoin is its environmental impact, which is, well, how does this digital currency have an environmental impact, right? It's in cyberspace. Got it. So, like you said, and it is, it's 21 million Bitcoin.
If y'all just saw
Bitcoin.
My face, I was squinting like, what?
we'll circle around. We'll get that. So it is 21 million Bitcoin that is out there. That's period. No one's printing more Bitcoin, creating more Bitcoin. In circulation, there is, for Bitcoin, 19.17 million. So there is still some out there to be obtained, discovered. How do you discover that? Well, this is a simplification, but there are algorithms, computer algorithms, that one requires computing power to solve. And when these algorithms are solved, it releases Bitcoin. So where's this computing power? Right. Well, if I get servers and I need fans to cool my servers and I need to get a whole bunch of like computers and link them together so I get a certain amount of smartness in my computer so that it can solve an algorithm. And when it solves that algorithm, it releases Bitcoin to that person.
That would probably be the environmental impact as well.
Right. Right, because you're using electrical power, right? You need to plug in more computers. You need to link the computers together. Mm-hmm. You need to cool the computers. All that takes electricity. All that takes more power, right? And that's where the negative impact to the environment comes from. So the term for this, kind of like in its real world equivalent, is called mining. Mm-hmm. So you're mining Bitcoin, right? By like solving these, instead of using shovels to dig and sift and find gold, right? You're using your computers to solve this equation. You need more typity-typity power to solve this algorithm. And if you do that, then you'll find Bitcoin.
And that's called proof of work?
It is called proof of work.
Okay.
Another popular, increasingly popular one, which is an answer kind of to how do we not have such an economic impact, is called proof of stake. And the reason why, okay, so if you're proof of work, I'm Ben. I just buy a whole bunch of servers, buy a whole bunch of fans, link them together, do the thing. I need like a, I need to maybe a rent a warehouse or a house and put them all in there, right? And then when I get Bitcoin, I don't have to keep Bitcoin. There's no incentive for me to hang on to it. Like I find Bitcoin, then I cash it in, then I get money, and that's how I get more money. I buy more computers, I buy more fans, I buy more places, and I do it all over again, right? I don't have to believe in Bitcoin. I just have to mine it and then get my money and then do it again. So proof of stake attempts to have people have more incentive to hold the coin itself, right? Mm-hmm. If you hold enough of the coin and if you acquire more coin and you hold the coin and you do what's called staking it, it's, I'm sure there's a better way to describe it, but let's talk about if you put, well, let's get the real generous banks. If you put $1,000 in the bank and you get 1% return rate, right? Then you'll have $1,000, right? You'll have $10 like at the end of a year, right? That's how we create more of this coin. Now we just have 10 more of this coin that we didn't have before. Well, these, if you have a lot of this coin, like $10,000 worth, and you're staking it, then you're earning this interest, and that's how it's generating more coin, right? So the impact to the environment is A, less, because you're not, you notice I didn't say computers or algorithms or fans or whatever, right? So the impact to the environment is less, and the incentive for you to actually hold and keep this coin is higher. So when you have more coin, you're more incentivized to keep it and stake it so that it generates more coin.
So I think I remember, this makes a lot more sense after reading that, an article. I remember reading an article on a website you had told me about, or a video, and they were talking about how, what's the second biggest behind Bitcoin?
Ethereum.
Ethereum. ETH. Yeah, Ethereum, that I forgot how to say it, is moving from a proof of work to a proof of stake model.
That's right, yes.
And now that makes a whole lot more sense as to what I was talking about.
So,
and I guess and there's like some question about it or concerns or something, but.
Yeah, it was a very complex. I saw one article that referred to it as it's like changing out the engine of a car mid-drive, right? Piece by piece, like putting different pieces in there. And that's how complex the it is, right? And like very dangerous, the whole thing could go down. And if it doesn't work. And so what you're referring to, the merge, arguably is one of, in the timeline of cryptocurrency, is one of the like major, that is a major milestone, right? Like, probably since the creation of Bitcoin, this is the next big wow, didn't know you could do such a thing, right? To go from a proof of work to a proof of stake, to change it out.
So this is the first time it's been done?
Ever, yes, okay. For any coin. And this is the second biggest coin, right? And if it didn't work...
Can we be honest, though? How much? What is the worth? I think it's important for people to understand the second biggest coin compared to Bitcoin. Bitcoin is worth how much versus Ethereum?
Okay.
Because that's so a huge difference.
At the time, I'll go back. So the reason why you hear about Bitcoin and have not heard about anything else is because in the cryptocurrency market, overall, there are – it is percentage. Let's see. What are we percentage? What percentage are we? It is at 386.4 billion of the market, right, of the crypto market, which is market dominance. It's at 40%. So if there's a cryptocurrency market, this much of it is Bitcoin, just Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Right. So all the other ones and its value. So let's talk in terms of value, right? The number one coin is Bitcoin. At the time, on my little phone, as I tell you, another benefit to cryptocurrencies is that the markets are 365 days, 24/7. So they don't close, which is to say after Wall Street closes and you can't trade on them anymore, not true about the cryptos. They keep moving up and down. So right now I'm looking at my phone. It is approximately $20,000. It is $20,161.69 per Bitcoin. The next largest one, the number two by volume, is per coin $1,353.60. So
for Ethereum,
$20,1,300 for Ethereum, right? So, and that's, and then Bitcoin probably has twice out there as ETH does. So, anyway, so that's kind of why you always hear, and there's most of the coins that exist have a very strong Bitcoin, like what Bitcoin does going up or going down, they kind of do as well, going up or going down. So a trend. They're not tied to Bitcoin, but that's just kind of a strong indicator. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's a little bit about that, right? Like, and that the merge that you're talking about is when they went from proof of work to proof of stake. So that's a value. Another thing about, like, you hear gas, I don't know if you've heard the term gas term. So these transactions that happen on the blockchain, right? And it's, I have seen blockchains depicted in animations as a train. Picture a really weird train that comes into the station car by car. Yeah. So comes into the station car by car. First car pulls in the station, transactions get on, right? The people are transactions. They get on. And then it moves up to the next car, right? Everybody in the first car, those doors are locked. You're not getting off. Sad face. And then everybody keeps getting on. Well, there are gas fees for you to get on to get into those trains. If you want to pay a cheaper gas fee in this 5-car train, you can't even get on to the last car. If you pay more, you can get on the first car, right? You're definitely on and you're super fast.
Kind of like a transaction fee or a
transaction? Right, like a transaction fee. And the higher, usually kind of the higher it is, the sooner you can board, more or less. But your train,
why
your train's
going
to go.
What?
Not why that's good. It's just a concept, like blockchain technology concept I want to pull up. For Ethereum and some of the older coins, those are a little more slower, right? I don't have the numbers, you know, but like say if those are one or two or five transactions per second, some of the other coins aim to solve that problem by having 10,000 transactions a second, right? So to make that easier, to where one of the detractors from using cryptocurrencies is if you're placing that gas fee may go down, right? Depending on who's using the blockchain worldwide, right? If everybody's trying to buy stuff, right, and the train station is overloaded with people trying to get on trains, well, now the price to get on the train first is going to go up. Whereas
supply and demand.
Yes, but if the ability to do, like, if the doors open on the train and everybody got a door and they just walked all on at the same time and then it was full, well, then you wouldn't it wouldn't cost you anything different, right? So that's another thing, like, people hold up. So some of the benefits. Well, I'll leave that to you. Benefits or cons? Like, why? What are concerns you, or are you more interested to know, to talk about first about cryptocurrencies?
Join us next episode when Kate answers this question and we take a more in-depth look at benefits, drawbacks, and more. Tune in for the conclusion of this conversation and keep discussing.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe. Follow us on social media and check out our Patreon page. Leave us a review on your listening platform if you like the podcast. If you haven't heard your viewpoint or would like to be a guest, email us at info@artofdiscussing.com.
Till next time,
Remember, there's more sides to the story than yours. Look, listen, and learn, and keep discussing.